This program is a theoretical account of the events that occurred on the morning of July the 2nd, 1937, and thereafter. Although she was declared dead in absentia on January the 5th, 1939, the Amelia Earhart disappearance case is considered by many to be unsolved. Vanished Amelia Earhart is recorded in its entirety with the Zoom H1N microphone. Get yours now at zoom-na.com. Welcome back. I want to thank everyone that tuned into our first episode. The response that we received was overwhelming. I thought I'd take a walk tonight, but by the sound of the thunder you just heard, it sounds like my walk is going to be cut short. I was thinking about the early days of aviation, what a lot of people refer to as the golden age. I was thinking about the aeronautical environment and how new it was to be up in the sky. I was thinking about the Wright brothers and their vision that allowed people to experience a whole new perspective on life. I was thinking about the women who stood at the forefront of aviation. Women like Louise Thaden, Florence Klingensmith, Ruth Elder, Ruth Nichols, Bessie Coleman, Ruth Law. A lot of Ruths in the early days of aviation. And of course, I was thinking about Amelia Earhart. What these women faced in this new profession was unreal. The idea that they could be dismissed before ever even trying to do what men had done causes the mind to reel. Looking back now, it's apparent to everyone that these women made up the very foundation of what women are accomplishing today. All because a few brave women dared to dream and then dared to act on those dreams. We have the success that there is in the modern age of aviation, aerospace, and STEM. But success didn't come without sacrifice, and it didn't come without death. In that time, there were 1,000 ways to die in the sky. When we're talking about aviation and history, we need to bring in someone that knows both. Someone that can relate to us the struggle, the sacrifice, and the glory that Amelia Earhart and the rest of these early pioneers of aviation experienced. Luckily, I know just the guy, and I happen to have his cell phone number.
Aviation was exceedingly dangerous. The first fatal crash was a Wright Flyer, and only 5 years after the Wright brothers had first flown. And this is fairly soon to have that kind of fatality.
Since the inception of Chasing Earhart, Doug Westfall has become more than just a project guest. He's been a mentor and a close friend of mine. It's difficult to explain how we clicked instantly after our first meeting, but we have similar personalities, and I have a hell of a lot of love and respect for him. Doug has written and or published multiple books on the life of Amelia Earhart. Like J.A. Keel on our first episode, his books are largely about the little things in Amelia's life, and they don't focus so much on the disappearance. Doug is a historian first, and because of that, tonight's episode of this show was the perfect introduction to a man that has a vast amount of knowledge.
In the 1920s alone, there were over 175 air crashes. Unbelievable in that time frame. There were airship disasters, of course, but there were few and far between. Some of the crashes would have up to a dozen people on board. And eventually, because of the death of Newt Rockne, the Department of Air Commerce, the forerunner of the FAA, basically said no more strutted aircraft because too many were crashing. There were so many air crashes constantly putting planes back together. Amelia, in her own right, she had an Avro Avion from England that she brought over on a ship, and that went down three times. These aircraft were not put together well. They were not made for the stress of air flight. They were made cheaply, again, to keep the cost down. Even if you didn't have a crash, you were always trying to put something together to fix an aircraft. There was always a problem.
So now we've set the stage for what it was like in the sky during the birth of flight. Pretty scary if you ask me. But the women? Not only did they face deck stacking statistics during those days, but they faced a whole additional set of obstacles, internal obstacles.
The primary obstacle is cost. An aircraft could cost well over $1,000 then, multiply by 20 just to be able to have an aircraft that you could fly. And of course, these are all biplanes, single engine, typically three-cylinder engines. I mean, very, very dangerous and very low cost. Amelia Earhart, Pancho Barnes, so many of the early aviators had extreme struggles with men opposing them in this field, yet there were so few flyers that they all found a way of doing it one way or the other. Amelia Earhart literally bought her first plane on time.
Let me make this clear. Women were not wanted in aviation. They were considered inferior to men in this aspect. However, a few brave women would change everything once they were given their shot. They were out there, waiting in the wings, and what they would end up accomplishing is nothing short of extraordinary.
I believe there were always women of this nature. There just wasn't a vehicle for them to do so. You also have women getting into motoring, using automobiles, racing. And so once the mechanic age took off, it gave women an alternative to show their stuff. Is that a good term? It gave them an opportunity that they would have never had in, say, the Victorian era. And so obtaining the access alone to an aircraft, getting training, going flying, occurred all over the country. Netta Snook, Amelia's first trainer, is a woman from Iowa, and she learned there in Davenport.
People come into our lives for very specific reasons. If you know anything about Amelia Earhart, the woman that Doug just mentioned should be important to you. Anita Snook, Netta, or as her friends called her, Snooky, is a legend in her own right. She was the first female aviator out of Iowa, the first female student to be accepted to the Curtis Flying School in Virginia, the first female aviator to run her own aviation business, and the first to run a commercial airfield. Netta's autobiography, I Taught Amelia to Fly, aptly captures the essence of her fame, and she was forever linked to what has become the Earhart lore as Amelia's first flying instructor.
Amelia had seen her first plane in Iowa, but she rode in her first plane, I believe it was 1922, at the Long Beach Airfare. One of the hangars is still there, amazingly. What she did was her dad paid $10 for a 10-minute ride so she could go up. And we're talking, you know, like $120 today. And she loved it. And it was only a short trip up north to Bell, the city of Bell, where she bought her first plane on time from Kinner Air. The woman there that was running the shop was Netta Snook from Iowa. And Amelia had been from Iowa. She had lived there as a youth. And so they struck up a conversation, and Netta agreed to teach her. And a few lessons later, Amelia is flying a plane. Netta was also with her when she crashed her first plane out at Mines Field, which is now known as LAX. She was taking off, and she was too close to the trees. They used eucalyptus trees as windbreaks to cut the wind at the airport because it's right off the ocean. And she was too close, and as she came up, she pulled on the stick to try to get the aircraft to go up higher, and unfortunately it stalled, and they kited down gently into the grasses and did damage the ship, but didn't hurt either women. And all these people are running over, and Netta turns around, and Amelia's facing away. She's looking at the fuselage, and Netta goes, "What are you doing? These people are coming to see you." She says, "Give me a minute. I'm putting on lipstick."
Two of the most famous aviators of all time involved in a spectacular crash together, and Amelia Earhart is worried about her appearance. This is a look into a woman that Amelia would eventually become, self-aware, always promoting, and always showing that she had complete control over fear. But what about the rest of the female aviators of the time? Women like Florence Klingensmith, Ruth Elder, Ruth Nichols, and so many others. Were they self-aware? And did they know each other? Was there a mutual respect between everyone for being in the same boat, so to speak? And did they ever come together as one?
Before the formation of the 99s, which brought a lot of these women together, of course, in one group, there was camaraderie, but again, they're all from different cities all over America. They would come to these air shows and then split up, go back. They'd never see them again. Telephone was very expensive to use. You didn't stay in touch too often. Some of them wrote back and forth, but again, then they'd meet at another air show in some other city like New Jersey, and they would strike up their friendship again. But it was never, they were very isolated in their efforts. Each one did their own thing and then would meet up at a certain point.
Like in comic books, the individual heroes would have their own adventures, slaying their own villains and obstacles. And when the time called for it, the heroes would come together. And make no mistake about it, these women were heroes. But that begs the question, were there ever any rivalries?
I've never heard of a rivalry, not one. I know they would talk back and forth and jest how so-and-so run. Netta Snook won run of the derbies out here in L.A., but then turned around, got married, had a child, and never flew again. And a lot of these women went through that pattern where they were independent and doing their thing and up in the air, and then they'd find love, and that was it. They didn't fly again. One of the exceptions, of course, is Pancho Barnes. Another one is, of course, Amelia Earhart. But at the same time, most of these women slowly faded out of the limelight and had families and lives and went on with it.
Pancho Barnes. Remember that name. She broke Amelia's speed record. Records are made to be broken. Her career was a fascinating one, and she often doesn't get the proper due that she deserves. Look her up. You won't be disappointed.
Both Amelia and Pancho were adventuresome. They were the ones out there. You look at their histories, their childhoods. They were the one going down the hill on skates. They were the one taking the risks. They wanted the excitement. They wanted the adventure. And, of course, aviation gave that to them in such great quantity. Winning awards and races also helped to bolster their spirits, but it was their way of expression. Amelia only got married for business purposes. Pancho got married because family told her and then soon divorced. And so these women were really on their own. They were really out there. This is what they wanted. And this is what we see to this day in the histories of these women.
In the last episode, we talked about that quote in Amelia's yearbook that Susan helped us determine was not accurate. But I kept going back to those words. Quote, the girl in brown who walks alone. While the quote may not have been a true attribution written in Amelia's high school yearbook, the words do seem to fit Amelia's true nature.
This gave her an advent that allowed her to go further and farther on her own. She didn't need anybody with her. She didn't have to take a train. She liked fast airplanes. She liked fast cars. There's a story in one of her terraplanes, by the way, which would do 80 miles an hour. I talked to a young fellow whose grandfather stopped her on a road and for doing 80 on a back road. And he said, once he realized it was Amelia Earhart, he let her off. And I said, oh, darn, the ticket would have proved that it really happened.
How would you have liked to be that officer? Pulling someone over for speeding only to find that that someone was Amelia Earhart. Unbelievable. After talking with Doug, I got to thinking about what it must have been like to fly these incredible machines in the sky during those early days of aviation. How did the mechanics work? What went through Amelia's mind during these flights? To gain some further understanding, I had to consult a pilot, but not just any pilot.
It was inherently risky at the beginning because it was all new. A lot of the training that we do today, we look back and go, those lessons are learned in blood.
To say that aviation runs in the blood of Boyd Kelly would be an understatement. He won a Civil Air Patrol scholarship and was hooked on flying before ever learning to drive. Like many of our Chasing Earhart Project guests, he has ties to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, receiving his education there. He went on to be a flight instructor and teach aviation classes all while building his own flight time. He moved on to flying freight, which led to his first commuter job, where he earned his first airline captain stripes. Currently, Boyd works for a major U.S. airline, flying internationally on the Boeing 777, with over 10,000 flight hours. In addition to flying, he runs the popular Air Boyd Aviation YouTube channel with an incredible 250 million views worldwide.
And obviously, getting something into the air, the Wright brothers proved you could do it, but you had to keep improving upon that as time went over. The bigger challenges came with the things that we really take for granted today, and that's, you know, flying through weather, navigation, distances, the availability of airfields to land, fuel, things of that nature. And at the beginning, we really knew nothing about, you know, flying through thunderstorms, for example, which is something we just don't do anymore because it tears the aircraft apart. And, you know, this time and period in the 20s and the 30s certainly predates any sort of, you know, safety regulation or anything for the most part. Even the Airline Pilots Association, ALPA, which represents a large part of the U.S. Aviation community for major airlines, they got their start in the 30s, and it was specifically to address the issues that were coming about from flying mail and things back and forth across the country. So it wasn't a fun time. Open cockpit planes, open cockpit biplanes, monoplanes, you're out there in the elements, and you can imagine on an East Coast day taking off in the fog today and trying to get your plane from, you know, say New Jersey to Chicago, having to stop a couple times, your only real navigation's roads. At nighttime, they literally lit bonfires to navigate. You know, you've got your leather jacket. I mean, you're exposed to the elements. There's no GPS. There's no Waze. There's no Google Maps. There's no nothing. So the fact that we even got this far is pretty amazing to begin with. A single or twin seat biplane, you know, much like the Kinner Airster, the Canary that she flew, everything's basically just cables and wires connected to a stick and an engine out front that was hand propped. There's no hydraulics, there's no flight computers, there's no nothing. So it's, you know, it's, you're physically moving the airplane around. I'm reluctant to say that they were unsafe back then, because I mean, these aircraft are still flying today in many cases. The engines themselves may not have lasted as long as they did today, but they certainly did their job. And then, you know, the aerodynamics that everybody looks at on a biplane still endures to this day. It wasn't an easy thing to fly. And in the case of like a single seat biplane, there's nowhere for a flight instructor to go. So, you know, if you were lucky enough to find some place that had a two-seat aircraft, you'd learn to fly in that, but then you're back in your single-seater flying around, learning by yourself again. You had to be a good pilot. I mean, it was not going to work out for you if you didn't get the hang of it back then. I think it's probably a lot more forgiving today, and a lot of that's the technology and the ability to have a larger plane and someone go with you. Obviously, the radios, having things like an autopilot are a big help today, but back then, I mean, you learned or you died.
I've heard a lot of crazy things since we started this project, but navigation by bonfire? Now I've heard it all. No GPS, virtually no technology whatsoever, just putting a pilot into an aircraft and then putting that aircraft into the sky. Cross your fingers and hope you don't die. Earlier we talked about obstacles that women faced, and I mentioned that they weren't wanted in aviation. But maybe I was wrong. Were women wanted? Were they looked down upon, condescended to?
Well, absolutely. And I think you'll find a lot of it is still indicative of the time period. You know, women were supposed to be at home in the home, taking care of children, being housewives. You'll find a lot of the books, and particularly the children's books today that you read about Amelia Earhart, a lot of it focuses on her attitude that she was told she couldn't do it or shouldn't be doing it, but she persevered. And that's what every single one of these women had to do, including Netta Snook, her first flight instructor. You know, a female flight instructor would have been unheard of in the day. They're still fairly rare today. It's just the way that we've grown up historically, and that, you know, math and science has typically, you know, gone to the male side and not so much the female side. And that time back then in history, women just didn't go to work, period, for the most part, let alone fly airplanes, teach people to fly around the world by themselves. It just wasn't done.
If you know Amelia Earhart, then the 99s should be very familiar to you. Amelia was crucial to the formation of the 99s and was subsequently elected their first president. She was a hands-on president, participating in every meeting, handwriting letters to members herself. It wasn't just a publicity stunt for her. She took it very seriously. Thinking about the 99s, I wondered out loud if Amelia and the founding members of the 99s would be satisfied with the current state of women in aviation. a cause that they fought so hard for?
I think they'd keep pushing. I don't know that you can necessarily say satisfied is a, you know, sort of a line in the sand. I think that, you know, particularly someone with like Amelia, who had the following and everything, probably would have gone a lot further in her career, perhaps even, you know, management at an airline like many of, you know, the other pioneers did, and, you know, certainly our World War II aces as time went on. But, you know, I mean, I can't speak for a woman being a man, but there's certainly a lot more women at work that I see and certainly getting interested in it. And, you know, I do mentoring, and there's women all the time coming out to me saying, you know, I always wanted to do this, but I kind of sidetracked with something else. There's always a lot of concerns that I hear that, you know, simply just aren't really an issue nowadays. Like, you know, what if I want to have a family, things of that nature? You know, we have ways of dealing with that at work. You know, flying while pregnant, you know, there's FAA rules on that. So it's, you know, it certainly can be overcome. But I think that at least someone like Amelia probably would have pushed further today and pushed the boundaries. You know, and we've had women astronauts. The number two head of NASA for a while was a woman. I mean, it's, you know, we've come a long way. Could we have come further? Probably. But, you know, it's hard to speculate too far. But I think those women pioneers that we had back in the day would have pushed even further today. Plus, they would have had a stronger, bigger voice. You know, the internet, television, things of this nature would really help push them along.
One of the many things that has always fascinated me about Amelia Earhart is her legacy. This is a woman that continues to reach out to people through the bridge of time, almost cheering people on from beyond, saying, hold on just a little longer. We experience tales of Amelia's reach every day here at Chasing Earhart, and Boyd's personal experience isn't any different.
It almost seems like it's been coming up more and more recently, and I just think it's, you know, the awareness of it, certainly, you know, things like the podcast, getting it out there, you know, Night at the Museum, was Battle of the Smithsonian, you know, they had the Amelia Earhart character by Amy Adams. It really starts to bring back a lot of it and keeps the name circulating around. And I know we talked about before where I live near Van Nuys was the Amelia Earhart Park. And, you know, just this week I was at my my son's school reading the I Am Amelia Earhart book, which is the Brad Meltzer series. But it was certainly one of the most popular books I read in the classroom that day. And it just invokes that spirit. And because I think that everybody looks back at it and sees it as being a can-do attitude and a not listening to no and persevering as all women and the aviators did back in that time, it's really an uplifting thing that resonates with everybody. You know, it's I can do it and I should do it and I'm going to do it whether you tell me not to.
Imagine getting into an airplane and taking off and not knowing if you were going to land and survive. Would you do it? Probably not. Most people wouldn't take that risk. But Amelia Earhart knew something that most of us will never realize. The reward is worth the risk. The reward begets the glory. And the glory inspires.
To go and fly across the Atlantic by yourself, knowing that there's no place to stop, go to the bathroom, eat, refuel, even taking a nap. I mean, this, the same thing with Charles Lindbergh. I mean, it's just, you know, you're going to fly for 17 some odd hours by yourself across the Atlantic and hope you make it to the other side. You certainly got to overcome an awful lot of things to do that by yourself. You know, and I've been sort of framing a lot of my discussions and talking about Amelia slightly different. In that I'll tell people, I was like, you know, if I had told you that there was someone out there who had designed their own clothing line, had become an editor for Cosmopolitan, best-selling author, in addition to breaking all the records and everything, you would probably think I was talking about any sort of social media star or YouTube star today. But this was Amelia Earhart, and this was in the 30s and late 20s, which is, you know, just right after the women had got the right to vote in the United States. And to achieve that sort of fame in an area and time that just didn't have, you know, social media, the internet. I mean, telephones were new, newspapers and newsreels were it. And, you know, she was literally famous, and she had to do all these other things basically to help get her flying career going and keep flying.
And keep flying she did. But we'll save that for later. That brings episode 2 of Vanished Amelia Earhart to a close. I want to thank everyone for coming back tonight to continue this journey with me. A very special thank you to Doug Westfall and Boyd Kelly for their insight and expertise. Look for links to their work in the show notes for tonight's episode. The rain's coming down. Episode 3, coming at you soon.
This is Dan Lefebvre from the Based on a True Story podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of Vanished, Amelia Earhart. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media where our team posts all of our episodes as they air, news and show information and more. Go to facebook.com/VanishedAmeliaEarhart and on Twitter and Instagram, search the handle @VanishedAE. Reviews are crucial to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please head to iTunes to rate us and leave us a review. It really helps get the word out. Vanished, Amelia Earhart is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Chris Williamson. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarrus Schmidt. The opinions on Vanished, Amelia Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films, Inc. Chris Evan Films, Inc. is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education and no infringement is intended. Vanished, Amelia Earhart is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films, Inc. and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films, Inc. All rights reserved. Vanished, Amelia Earhart is a Chris Evan Films production, copyright 2019. All rights reserved.